This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Jeff, Chris, back for another week of fun and frivolity. Chris, we have to talk about the story that the entire wrestling world right now is talking about. Big, huge deal.
Okay.
I know you believe this too.
Sure. Plaidgate?
I think they broke up the Hunt.
Oh. I got to tell you. This Eddie Dennis, this guy... Pro wrestling has a new top heel this week. And life, honestly, has a new top heel this week. A bit of a dwagon, if you will.
They've replaced him with Tyson T-Bone, I think. Unless they're going to make it a three-man. I was hoping they'd make it a three-man, but it sounds like they got rid of him.
And I'm wondering if Hitchman is being rebranded, maybe? Like, he might be... Yeah.
86th.
He might be 86th.
I don't know. I mean, he's short. He's not a WWE looker type of thing. I don't know. That just made me sad. I love Mike Hitchman.
I think that, like, this faction, one, I think the faction worked with Dennis, Lieutenant like a Tyson T-Bone, and then the Hunt as the tag team / henchman. Here come the Hunt, and, you know, they do their thing. And in that setup, Hitchman makes perfect sense. Like, should Hitchman be the leader of a faction? Probably not. I haven't seen him do a promo in a while, but like I would say probably not. But in this role inside of a faction as like the, you know, the blade and knife sort of tag team, yeah, go ahead, man. Let's do it.
Man, make him a three, man. Don't get rid of my boy. Don't get rid of my boy, the Wild Boar. I love that. I just love him. He's so adorable.
Here's the thing. If you were writing him off, you wouldn't have included him in that package.
That's true.
He was actually edited into the package. Like he was being penalized.
Yeah, for those... we'll talk about the AEW stuff in a moment. You wanted to talk about renting?
Not about renting, per se. I wanted to talk about... essentially manifesting reality by thinking about something, Jeff. I wanted to get deep again, as I am wont to do with these opening
expositions.
Because
we are a deep show.
No, I like to think that Shake Them Ropes, named after the Ultimate Warrior, who was a bit of an internet philosopher himself, you might remember, has always been the thinking man's pro wrestling podcast, and women. And honestly, not just thinking men and women, thinking everybody. Everyone can think and listen to Shake Them Ropes. And that's the spirit of this show. And so I do another show where I think often. It's called Don't Worry About the Government. And one of the things I like to think about on that show and have thought about for a long time has been cameras and surveillance and Fourth Amendment issues. But like I literally just did an episode on Ring doorbells. We were just talking about cameras 2 weeks ago on the show, which you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, and over at don'tworry.tv. But this week, I'm plinking along on my computer, doing my little worky work stuff, and I hear like a kerthud on the sidewall of my apartment, and I'm like, what is going on? I walk and I see that there are like these worker people at the window, and they're doing something that appears to be on the roof or whatever, and you know, I go back to work and I do my thing. Later on, behind me, you'll see there's a window right there.
Yes, by the way, this is the first week ever that we have our cameras on to do this podcast.
Yeah, this is like video, Shake Them Ropes.
But you see, they're listening, so they can't see the window behind you, but I can.
Yeah, well, so they can't see that I have a shirt that says, I'm a great listener. It's got a fennec fox on it. Yeah, you see that, Hawkins? You see that? It's an adorable fennec fox. It says, I'm a great listener. He's got big ears. Point being... So outside that window right now is a camera. And they put a camera right on like the wall of my apartment. I have two cameras on either side, not actually pointing in at my apartment, but on either side of my apartment, which it was so surreal when I went to go and put that blind up and I look outside and I see like a camera like, what is going on?
Someone's hoping for a sex tape. Someone is hoping for a sex tape.
No. Okay, so like to this point, the one is pointing out to the driveway. So like, I don't know, you're not going to get a sex. And the other one is pointing down the walkway. I've ran the entire gamut though on these cameras. On like, you know, I had a break-in last year. So on one hand, kind of feel a little bit safer. On the other hand, I do have thoughts about like just having like a camera randomly rolling and like. Some of these security guards that we've had working here have been kind of dubious character. You might remember the one guy who, like, accosted me. Like, remember? It's like a couple years ago. Told you the story.
Yes.
I had the date, and, like, he, like, came up on me and the date when I was walking her back to her car. Anyways, we've had some dubious people. I don't like the idea that that guy would be watching these cameras. And then I look out the window today, and it doesn't look like it's even plugged into anything. Like, there's no wires or anything, so it might be running wireless. But I was, like, now wondering, how is this camera getting power?
Maybe they just put cameras there to make you think that you're being surveilled.
And then there's a little red blinky light inside of it. So I was thinking, like, is this literally just the shell of a camera with a red blinky light inside that is not actually recording anything to anywhere? I've been running the entire spectrum of emotions on cameras here. This has been tough for me. Thank you for your support.
That's all you
wanted to
say? Okay.
That's the whole story. you think about it, you make it reality sometimes. Cameras are complicated, Jeff.
Yes. Getting into the news. WWE announced WrestleMania tickets priced from $3,500 to $2,500 per night will go on sale March 16th.
What does $2,500 get me?
I don't... Probably a... Like a front row with a pod.
Do I get the
back?
Do I get like J&J?
They had a commercial tonight with a vaccination site, which is amazing on many, many fronts.
How does that work? what are the politics for them getting the vaccination site? Like, vaccine? Like, they're not. I mean, they are handing it out, but they're also like. Not just handing it out.
Yeah. Look, as they put all over SmackDown tonight, hey, WrestleMania is back, baby. Gets better. A few months ago, the hope was to put 30,000 in the stadium, but based on a meeting this past week, it looks like the goal is now 45,000 each night, which is 75% capacity. On March 10th, the city of Tampa had a meeting with some local hotels, and the hotels were told that the WWE is pushing to run Raymond James Stadium on April 10th and 11th at 75% capacity. The capacity for WrestleMania with the stage would have been 60,000, which is where the 45,000 number comes from. Chris, your thoughts?
Why not 60? Honestly, why not 75? Like, you know,
just we're open for business all the way.
Get them in. America is back, baby. And nothing says America is back like WrestleMania, a product that is white hot right now. You look at the ratings week to week. People love wrestling. And I don't think anything would really kind of signal that we're back better than a huge WrestleMania this year.
See, this people is the love first this week edge you can angle. See me. This is the first week you can see me roll my eyes at you when you do things.
I think this is psychotic, Jeff. I think this is...
I don't think it's a good idea. I don't.
No,
and
the worst part's the instinct, right? Like, they were set for 30. It's questionable that they're going to get 30 in. And it's obviously questionable from a moral standpoint if they're gonna be able to get 30 in a safe way. But then to go, you know what? 30, we can push it. Like
make it bigger.
Like they're playing blackjack or something. You
hit
know?
Me.
It hit me. Yeah. 16? I like my chances.
20, there's four aces in the deck. The hell with it. You know?
I just think I get it. I get that Vince is upset that WrestleMania was taken away from him last year from COVID-19. And it's like, for all the different things he's been able to beat in his life, this stupid virus that he can't even see took away something meaningful from him. And he wants to get right on this. But
speaking of which, they're going to do both classes of the Hall of Fame this year in one ceremony, which I think we're bringing back the 5-minute clock again. You remember with the Funk Brothers, who are legends in this, they got 5 minutes to sum up their career and get out. You know, I don't get it. I don't.
They just don't care about this situation. It has never been anything more than an inconvenience for WWE. And at most, an opportunity to market themselves as being really good on COVID-19 safety. Hey, remember that award? Remember that award?
Yeah. That's how they got the vaccination site.
Yeah. I want to know more about that too, Jeff. I want to understand how exactly we're getting the vaccination set up for WrestleMania. Like, surely there's some state officials making decisions on that front.
John Laurinaitis is back, a.k.a. Johnny Ace. He is back in charge of talent relations. Laurinaitis' official title is the new general manager of talent, a newly created position. Basically, talent relations is being split into talent management and talent branding. There will be someone as head of talent branding whose job it is to book WWE talent for outside appearances, commercials, movies, and third-party engagements, which, by the way, all those bookings will probably go against their downside guarantee in some way, much like Asuka shilling corn dogs right now.
I think there's another thing at play, though. I think that position's real job is to keep an eye on Twitch and all the other sorts of streams and stuff to make sure that that brand is not going any place that WWE doesn't want that brand to go.
Okay, I can buy that. Andrade requested his release, according to Wrestling Inc. Dave Meltzer updated later tonight, said that WWE has not granted them their release, or his release. I just view this as using whatever leverage you can and making it known that you're unhappy, and maybe they'll placate you because your girlfriend is very well liked within the company. I would also probably assume that Charlotte at some point may have to leverage if he wants to stay. If he really wants to leave, you know, New Japan is calling. Los Ingobernables is calling in New Japan. I am fine with that.
Oh, yeah, he'd do great in New Japan. Absolutely.
I made a point that Santos Escobar is basically doing what Andrade should be doing on the main roster right now. That's his gimmick right there. That should be him. In the mask, taking it off, going down, the whole spectacle, everything. That should be him right now. But let's face it, he had one of the best takeover matches in history against Gargano in Philly. I was there live with Rob McCarron watching it. It's fantastic. Vince doesn't know how to work with anybody who's not in their little box.
And there's a second thing when you bring up the Santos Escobar comp. And I think you're right, by the way. I think, you know, we've seen Escobar as King Cuerno have different looks and he can occupy many different persona. But this Santos Escobar persona that he's doing right now is very much what Andrade Cien Almas would be doing. However,
and that's no slight on him. That's no slight on Santos Escobar at all.
I love King Cuerno / Santos Escobar. No, I'm a huge fan. What I'm getting to is that Escobar was able to take this spot because Escobar is better at the English promos. And it was always a problem for Andrade Cien Almas. And that's why he had Zelina Vega. And that was a great formula. It really was. Except that Vince doesn't like the manager formula. And it never actually helped Andrade get better at doing these promos. I think part of the pairing with Zelina should have been, or one of the goals of that pairing should have been, to help him advance as a character, as a speaker, as someone who can talk on the mic, and he never was able to.
No, and if you remember, they re-signed Alberto Del Rio for the reason that, he's tall, and he's Hispanic, and he can speak English real well and cut those promos, and then they promptly made him a heel again, and it was just stupid. I kind of hope he gets his release. I hope a lot of people get their release so that they can be happy.
For my viewership.
They're hoarding people.
Yeah, that's the business strategy, though, right? Like, as a fan of wrestling, as a reviewer of wrestling, I want to see better stuff. I would like more watchable product. And in a lot of cases, these guys who are being hoarded right now, the whole point of hoarding them is so that they can't do more interesting things. So, yeah, no, it sucks. But at the same time, I get that it's a rational business move on some level. I understand why WWE is throwing their weight around. In the same way, like, I was trying to think of an analogy for this, but you and I both play poker. Think about when you're playing poker and you've got the big stack at the table.
Yeah.
The big stack is always just going to, like, bet into pots. I don't want to get too into the weeds for poker players here. They're just throwing a little bit of money around to force action, to force movement, because that's what you do as the big pot.
You have the power at the table, and you're trying to intimidate the smaller stacks into either going all in or getting out of the pot because you don't want them hanging around to get a hand.
You think that AEW, of all companies with all their casino branding, might understand this metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. WWE confirms NXT UK's Ben Carter has been renamed as Nathan Frazier. Why? Why?
Star-making change.
No, they gave him video vignettes with Seth Rollins, giving him the rub. He comes in. He has a great match with a kid. He loses, but it's a great match. Puts him on the map. We're just going to change your name and hope all's forgotten.
You missed another key part here, too. He was on the competition show as Ben Carter. So you could be like, oh, Ben Carter, remember when he was on AEW? Well, he's over on NXT UK now. He's doing these cool matches. Instead, you got this dynamite name of Nathan Frazier.
Not
Frazier.
It's not even memorable.
What it makes me think of is this one interview. I have no idea when I saw this, where Brendan Fraser was doing an interview with someone and correcting them that his name is not Frazier. It's Fraser. Fraser. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what I think of whenever I see the name Fraser.
Got it. WWE has filed a trademark for subculture. I can't imagine.
Oh,
the suck.
I know what this is. It's a slapjack subculture. He's making a breakaway group. People. Ali is a sandbagger. The slapjack snapback subculture. I'm here, baby.
I thought it was something with Peacock or the universe, but
slapjack subculture. Jackalopes unite.
Oh, I love that you popped me. we'll get to the slapjack update when we get to the main roster.
A little bit later, people. hang in there.
Oh, Peacock update. Okay, they have not called me. I was supposed to go on Fightful tonight after SmackDown and talk about my candidacy, but I had workmen coming into my place, so I couldn't do that live. But I'll be on the SmackDown review show next week. If I'm still a candidate, I'm going to start my write-in campaign. Should be polite. Just at Peacock and say, hey, how about you consider Jeff Hawkins for the role of charge of editorial for WWE?
I'm over here making bracelets with how to spell his name because my understanding is in this campaign, you've got to spell his name right in order for the votes to count.
Well, here's some further information. WWE made an announcement about moving everything to Peacock starting on March 18th. They will start Peacock with a page where fans can access every pay-per-view starting in 2020. Steve Austin's Broken Skull Sessions, WWE Chronicle, and WWE Icons, plus new NXT TV the day after they first air on TV. All 2021 Raw and SmackDowns, aside from those within the 30-day television window, WWE 24, The Undertaker's Last Ride, WWE Untold, Total Bellas, and more. There's a report that there will be no more match markers, and there'll be a scaled-down search feature when it moves over there. But the plan right now is a complete migration of the complete 17,000-hour library of what was on the WWE Network by SummerSlam. Peacock will also have a free channel, which will air Miz and Mrs., Total Bellas, Total Divas, Raw Talk, and The Bump. Your thoughts?
they need a channel that just runs random wrestling matches. What? Well, they need, yeah, obviously. But they need another channel. So you've got the talking channel or whatever, and the Miz and Mrs. and like kind of the reality TV thing. They need one that is just wrestling matches. Just like
they need a hub. They need a hub on that thing.
An endless stream. And then, yes, you need like an actual like kind of channel thing. But like an endless stream of wrestling matches is one of those things that if you could find it on YouTube, if you could just pop it on your TV, have it on, you, even if it's sound off, that's the type of thing that people would have on while they're working. You know, like if you just stumble upon a stream of wrestling matches, you might just watch it. If it's like all of the hyper packaging of WWE and stuff, that's gonna, especially for lapsed fans, too much. They need to be able to walk in easy and walk out easy, and kind of an endless stream of wrestling with kind of no beginning, middle, or end is the sort of thing that people keep on for 4 or 5 hours.
As seen on NXT this week, NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver will be two nights. First night on USA, giving it probably a goodbye as it moves to Tuesday. Not yet approved, but Stand and Deliver. Second night will be on Peacock.
I was trying to play Stand and Deliver.
Yeah. I was in the Edward James Olmos movie where they teach calculus to kids. It's one of my mom's favorite movies. But so NXT TakeOver will be two nights, which I believe brings the total number of nights of consecutive wrestling by WWE in some form that week to 9. I believe we're getting 9 hours straight of programming from WWE.
What it sometimes lacks in quality, you can often cobble together in just sheer quantity. It is
overkill.
It is overkill. Why do you think when I'm talking about what's the free pitch look like, my pitch for what would be a nice enhancer to get new eyes on the thing is something that does not require 9 hours of your life. Yeah, 9 hours?
9 days. Nine days, sorry.
9 days of your life. I'm talking about something that you can walk into and walk out of in 15 minutes. Because you know what the average length of a monetized YouTube video is? 10 minutes. It's not 9 days. This is where consumers are with product these days.
If you want my arcane reference of the week, go watch Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks movie. And they always ask, how long's your trial for? And, really good people are like 4 or 5 days. Albert Brooks goes, 9 days. They go, 9 days! Drink more sake because he had a sushi place. I recommend the movie, by the way, but yeah, that's too much. WWE hired a new announcer, as we saw on Monday, Kevin Egan. He will go by the name Kevin Patrick. He'll be an interviewer on Raw and do play-by-play for Main Event, as well as host Raw Talk. I'm assuming this is because Charlie Caruso is getting more ESPN time, or may be going there permanently. He had been working for CNN International, had hosted a sports show on Sirius XM, broadcast Atlanta United Soccer on Fox Sports South. Originally from Dublin, Ireland, he was a soccer announcer who covered the 2004 Olympics and also some games over here, and had become a host on BN Sports. Saw him on Monday. He was a little shaky in that first interview with AJ Styles. Getting a little international flavor on Raw. It's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. I don't hate it, I guess. Like, he doesn't seem untalented or whatever. It's just why there's this trepidation in my voice and sort of like a thinky eyes thing happening right now is I just have a hard time seeing how Vince and the writers are going to work with Kevin, given that they've been writing for, no knock on Dasha, but like, you know, the term Dasha bots comes to mind, where there's just like a ton of different people who have kind of filled that role. Like they've been typecasting that role for a very long time. And I don't know how British guy is going to work in that
Irish,
slot.
Irish, jumped down my throat.
No, I'll tell you, this is going to be the problem. Is that I don't know if Vince is going to necessarily always, he'll say British guy. He won't learn after the first time he gets corrected like I will.
Well, you're being sarcastic, right, about this Dasha thing? because they're just talking mic stands. They never do any into, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking? How do you feel? What's your plan?
I see this guy becoming either not
Mike Wallace? Is he going to be the Mike Wallace
WWE? No. Okay, so here's the tracks. One of two things happens. Either he's just like not there very long, and what we've done here
I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I actually think that's the most likely outcome, too.
Talks funny. Don't want him. He's good-looking, but he talks funny.
And that's my whole point about these talking mic stands, is like he doesn't actually fit the talking mic stand role. Or he is going to have to do slapstick, like, taking swirlies and going through like the concession booth.
He's gonna dress up as a leprechaun or as a Sheamus fan. He's gonna be like mini Sheamus. Oh, I'm
Braun
a fan
Strowman
I'm from Ireland.
Will like yeah, will you know? Yes, throw him into a peanut stand or something like that.
The Kevin Kelly, the new Irish Kevin Kelly.
He will have to do pratfalls and stuff. If he does pratfalls, he might last. But otherwise, I think he's not gonna be in the company very long.
Injury report: Anthony Bowens of the Acclaimed went under the knife for knee surgery. Serena Deeb also as well, arthroscopic knee surgery. And Asuka, our girl, last week on Raw, sustained a concussion from that kick to the head that knocked a tooth out by Shayna Baszler, so she is going to be on the shelf for a while as well.
Man, I think it's an interesting opportunity for Max Caster, the tag team partner.
I agree. I thought he was pretty good in that ladder match, by the way.
I see something in that guy. I think that he has a nice singles run in him eventually.
Ratings. I got the numbers, not the ratings. Of course, AEW doubled up in the demo. But AEW, kind of a disappointing number. 743,000 coming off a pay-per-view to NXT 691,000. I think you can blame a lot of this on the challenge. You can blame the South Park pandemic special in a way. Interesting. Coming off of a rather big pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You can talk about South Park, and you can talk about the challenge, but what you've
I'm
got...
I'm trying to think of a reason on the fly. I'm sorry.
No. Hey. I'm sure a lot of people, especially optimists, would try to look for a reason why, but I think if you bought the pay-per-view, you want to at least see what the aftermath was, but if you just heard about how the pay-per-view played out, you probably weren't super eager necessarily to see what the aftermath was. Or I think there's another demographic who were interested in what the aftermath was in a Tommy Wiseau, The Room sort of way. Like, how are they going to write themselves out of like this Shockmaster incident sort of thing?
Let's get AEW out of the way first because they have a lot more product to go through. We're not going to go through match by match, but
Do they have 11 days?
Did you watch Revolution?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a good show.
I did too.
I know, I just compared it to The Room and the Shockmaster at the end there. But like, I thought on balance, the show was really good and well worked. The surprise for me was how much I enjoyed the Sting and Darby Allin cinematic match.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are a lot of things in that match that are not Chris things that I ended up getting really into. I thought Sting looked great. I thought it was well shot. The soundtracking was a little weird, but, like, I just really enjoyed that. And there are a lot of these matches that I like. So, yeah, let's go through it match by match. Too.
Oh, do you want to? Okay.
I would have
preferred if they hadn't done the commentary live. I think that that was a bad move.
That was goofy.
I guess we can get to this when we get to the match. Yeah. So go ahead and get quick thoughts here because we got a lot of wrestling to cover, but go for it on the matches.
Okay, so we had Young Bucks defeating Jericho and MJF to retain the titles.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
Pre-show match was Thunder Rosa and what was the
Riho
match?
versus Britt Baker and Maki Ito. Look,
we'll talk about her when we get to Dynamite.
All right. I have strong thoughts on Maki Ito.
I do too, but mine are positive. It sounds like yours might be negative.
They are mixed. And strong in all directions. Okay. So then we have Rey Fénix and Pac winning the tag team casino battle royal. I thought really probably the biggest thing here was what's his name turning on the Nightmare Family.
Oh, QT Marshall.
QT Marshall. I wanted to call him CW Anderson, which I knew just, was yeah.
I didn't understand. Boy, you keep hearing that they're going to build Jungle Boy up, and I get that this might be the process, but this was a time to give him the win. Give him the win, even though the Jurassic Express is kind of played a bit. I don't care. Make Jungle Boy a star if you're going
to
make him a star.
He needs to get big wins. No, I'm with you. Like Jurassic Express is kind of played. They're not really kind of in a real serious chase for the titles right now, but if you give him a win along the way here, you're setting him up for the singles run. Right now, as I'm sitting here and thinking about, like, what is the singles run for Jungle Boy kind of predicated on, I can't think of that big, like, he went the distance against Jericho, and, like, that's the big match I can think of. He didn't even win that match. He just went the distance. Jericho was like, I don't think you can last 15 minutes. And Jericho didn't even want to give him the W like he gave Orange Cassidy. And yes, Jungle Boy went the distance, but...
Next.
Next, we had the Women's Championship match. Hikaru Shida defeating Rio Mizunami to retain the title. I really enjoyed this match. This is a pretty good match.
I liked it. There's a lot of Dusty Rhodes in Rio. There is a lot of Dusty Rhodes in her. I don't know if I like that or not, though. That's the thing. Is the... The sports entertainment aspect of her act, where she's doing like the miming and the rope, and it's like, I'm in a box. I appreciate it for what it was, but
it's not my style. I just thought it was like sufficiently stiff and well worked. And, you know, sometimes these matches can be a little variable in quality.
Okay.
Yeah. Next we had Miro and Kip Sabian defeating Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor. Orange Cassidy, in my opinion, has been a real loser over the last year here. Like, just like not
It's a lack of crowds. It's a lack of crowds, and then they're waiting for the crowd.
But but this holding pattern angle. So like it is a lack of crowds, and I think the lack of crowds motivated them to go, let's put him in this forever long angle with Kip Sabian and Miro. This is a holding angle for them. However, this angle is very boring. It's not going anywhere, and it's not really building up Orange Cassidy. And this match is a problem because this match was really centered on Miro. And all of the action, all the like discrete plot points in this match center around Miro. Miro not caring about Penelope Ford's safety. Miro like kind of bullying Kip Sabian and Penelope at the end of the match. And Orange Cassidy, did he tap out or was it Chuck who tapped out?
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
I
liked Born Again Hardcore Miro, though. I like that, the Penelope part, kind of lame, but I think they're going to break that group up and finally make Miro kind of a killer, so I'm cool with that, I think.
I'm cool with that if they do that, but Miro's got to start realizing less is more when it comes to these promos and a lot of the stuff that he's doing.
He still has a lot of WWE in him. Still, in terms of his promo.
Yeah. And then there's other instincts that I'm noticing in him that apparently WWE checked that are also getting in his way. So.
A little meta commentary in there, too.
Stuff sometimes gets in his way. Hangman Page defeats Matt Hardy in the big money match. Matt Hardy is... Matt Hardy constantly changing gimmicks, I, on one hand, kind of appreciate as this like late in his career homage to Mick Foley, but on the other hand, it makes it hard to latch on to anything that Matt Hardy's doing at any given point. And that's super important because Matt Hardy was good in this match, but by and large, Matt Hardy's not getting by on the wrestling at this point. Matt Hardy's getting by on the characterization.
He's getting by on goodwill. And it's
also true.
It's so weird that he's now has to be a heel and try and do that. I didn't understand the follow-up to this on Wednesday. Because if you're going to bring in another team for Matt Hardy to manage, Chris, he's had a team that he's paid off, that he knows he can rely on in the TH2. And I'm here for more Jack Evans, but then all of a sudden the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny show up, and you're like, huh, okay.
And the dynamic between Bunny and Hardy, it's just like a negative chemistry. It's not like not an intriguing chemistry. And the best way I can explain that, Jeff, is that they needed to quickly retcon what happened at Revolution. They needed to get Butcher and Blade away and Bunny away from Kingston so that they didn't have to deal with Kingston, or like that they could free themselves. And like maybe you could have Moxley and Kingston have a quick match with Butcher and Blade and then just move along from that, having completely resolved that angle.
Well, no, you just say we were disgusted with him going in there to save his friend after he was beating him up. That's not a guy with morals that we can trust or whatever. You need a quick promo and you got that. I mean, we're retconning everything else on this show. We might as well retcon that. Next.
Yeah, but by and large, though, the Matt Hardy match, this is a better than average Matt Hardy match. Next,
yeah, I agree.
We had Scorpio Sky defeating Cody Rhodes, Lance Archer, Penta El Zero, Max Caster, and Ethan Page to win the Face of the Revolution match. I want to say this about Ethan Page real quickly, and I'll let you break down the match after. I think if you're going to introduce people like Ethan Page into the AEW universe, sometimes it feels like people who are kind of writing the show out assume that we know who some of these talents are, and they just go in and go, oh, it's all ego Ethan Page. And I think you need to strike a happy medium from telling someone, here comes Ethan Page, and also not doing it at all. And so what I think that format is little advertisement packages. You used to see this all the time. Sort of most infamously, almost to the point of parody, Glacier, where they had like Glacier is coming. You don't want to do it like endlessly, but actually advertising some of these wrestlers like commercials, one, it allows you to fill some time. And two, it allows you to sort of seed the wind so that people are aware that maybe All Ego Ethan Page is coming sometime soon here in the next 4 to 6 weeks, but you don't know when. And so their arrival's a bit of a surprise, but it's also something that you have context for and you're ready for.
They rely too much on the knowledge of indie fans to know who Ethan Page is, I think. Maybe even completist, because if you remember, Ethan Page was in that very first Battle Royal on All In, the very first All In. It was the program with him and Jordan Grace before they got picked up to TNA. They were kind of teasing that a little bit. If AEW does one thing poorly and consistently does it poorly, it's introductions. They did it with FTR. That was kind of poor. The Butcher and the Blade was kind of poor. You know, they have a nasty habit of assuming and also thinking things are going to be bigger than they are. And when it's just build them up. Now, if you remember, they did do the Glacier style thing with a member of their women's division that didn't pan out. Sadie Gibbs, I think was her name. If you remember her, the gymnast. And they showed that great promo on, I think, the first pay-per-view and then the first couple of Dynamites. And then she did a match and she wasn't that good. And then eventually she just decided she didn't like wrestling anymore.
Mm. Lucha Underground used to do these sorts of things, though, with some degree of efficacy, where they would get you ready for Johnny Mundo coming in, and other people, Taya Valkyrie. Just having little advertisements for wrestlers who are not yet in the company makes people sort of excited to see, like, oh, who's going to be the mystery debut? When is this person going to show up? How are they going to show up?
Dare I say NXT UK does a very good job on their promo videos.
I think so. Opinion. Yeah, I think so.
The match itself, you know, it's a ladder match. It's brutal. A lot of people doing a lot of crazy stuff. Ray, of course, is an insane man. Ethan Page taking a lot of damage in this match as well. Scorpio Sky eventually gets the win, gets the match, loses the match, turns heel. You were correct. I didn't see it coming, but Scorpio Sky goes in, grabs the ankle lock again, holds it on there for a bit. I assume this is what leads to Darby losing the title to somebody eventually. He was so hurt. And
I don't know that Scorpio Sky's done with him. I think that the tell there is that Sky got him to tap out when he was putting the heel hook on. So I don't think that that's done. I actually think Sky had to put the title off of Darby. Because you still got the Darby and Sting thing going on. Like, they've got their own stuff going on. So the belt has been an additional prop for Darby. A prop that is not necessary. And Sky does need to do something. And there's now some intrigue in him being a heel. So I think he ultimately wins the title. And I don't hate this move. It does make me wonder about, like, what happens with SCU. Especially now, Scorpio Sky.
That's what I was thinking too, because I thought he was going to be instrumental in the breakup of SCU, but it looks like SCU's match with the Bucks is going to be on the back burner, or may just be a throwaway on TV, because they're going to be in a match now with Pac and Phoenix that they're building up. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, this Wednesday night show was weird because it seemed like everybody turned. At one time, I mean, yeah, the Death Triangle were baby faces, but now they're heels. But they also healed on the Murder Hawk Monster when Phoenix said he was the worst partner he ever had. And then Murder Hawk's kind of playing anti-hero baby face, but now he's going to heal on Sting. And then you get the final angle, which we'll get into after we get through Revolution.
Well, I mean, technically, with Phoenix being heel and Archer being heel now, it's not inconsistent. It's just you're flipping everyone for the purposes of flipping everyone. And we'll talk about
it's
all the
in-depth,
terms here.
It's in-depth storytelling because heels can hate heels. I get that, but you understand what I'm saying. They had a huge baby face pop, and they have to heel it up, I guess, for the Bucks.
Well, because
the Bucks were heels, and then just all of a sudden turned babyface after an angle.
This is a big AEW problem, is that people are turning, and it makes sense that they brought in the Big Show.
If you're going to turn
people randomly, you need the Big Show in there as a commentator, because there's no one who understands that better.
Next match. What did you think of the Cody? I hate these angles where, we're pulling somebody out for medical attention and they sit there and you know they're coming back. I just, you know, there should be a different way to do this somehow, but I don't think there is.
No. All the vice presidents right now are just not super intriguing characters for me on this product, in part because, as we were just discussing, they're all turning every week, it seems like. To every season, turn. There is a reason. Mm-hmm. Turn. next, we have the main event. The main event, Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley. Boy, this is a fun match. Obviously the finish. Like, let's just put that asterisk above me the entire time. But outside of that, like, a lot of the explosions and stuff look good. I thought there was a really coherent story also being told throughout the course of this match. So, like, someone like me who is not into a blood and guts match for the sake of blood and guts, actually was like, no, there's a story here, and they're getting bloody, and they're getting busted up, but, like, it makes sense why they are doing most of these things. It only really fell apart for me when the Good Brothers showed up, and, like, it just sucked all of the energy out of the match for me. I was like... There was no one to come and save Moxley from the Good Brothers. It seemed weird that he had no plan for that, because, like, obviously that was a thing that he should have seen coming. And, you know, this raises questions about Kingston's run-in too later, I suppose. But I'm just thinking about it, like, you should have, like, some sort of strategy. Like, obviously the Good Brothers are going to show up. Obviously Cyrus is going to show up. The Invisible Hand is going to show up. Don Callis. You need to have a strategy for this. But, like, the actual finish of the one-wing angel through the chair was one of the doper one-wing angels I have seen in a long time.
I agree. I loved this match. I thought it was a lot of fun. I loved the homage to Onita that Moxley was doing. even the drinking from the flask, which I thought was kind of cool. I thought Kenny brought it in this match, too. And, you know, obviously, you know, some of these stunts were insane during this time. Apparently, the explosion looked better live than it did on TV. Look, it wasn't the big explosion that they wanted. I get that.
Why were they booing it live then?
Okay. Well,
because there was,
I said it looked better. I didn't say it sounded better. I didn't say it was a big
explosion. No, but I'm just saying if it looked passable live, I would not have been hearing booing on the commentary. And that was not the NBA feed. That was on the pay-per-view. So I know that they were booing the wrestling. They weren't booing the foul shots of the bad refereeing.
I get that you have to take off time off of this. I wish they had cut the feed right at the moment that it kind of dudded and they knew it was a dud. They had to cover for that as opposed to leaving them out there.
Oh, man. Kill the lights. So, like,
yes,
the explosion looks like crap. You're like, oh, that's bad. Tony Khan goes, blackout, people. And it just blacks out. And it's like, oh, we lost the feed. Oh, I killed
think they
the
got
cables.
Nervous. I think they panicked. I think they panicked and they said, okay, maybe it'll go off. Keep trying. Keep trying to hit it. Keep trying to do something. They should just cut it off there. Boom. And then they wouldn't have had to do what they did Wednesday.
I felt the worst for Eddie Kingston, like, who I think, I gotta say, in the moment, I think Kingston made the right call. You commit to the act. It's dying. You're dying. Everyone's dying. It's death out there. You just have to die.
Lingering on him like that. They lingered on this. Like, why are they not cutting this feed?
Help the man.
Make him look good. Now,
but he did the right thing. And that's a tough instinctual call. I think, like, a different talent would have tried to, like, do something crazy to save that moment. And Kingston.
Yeah, I do too.
He did the right thing, the safe thing.
Or they would have been looking around or something. He just stayed there and
said,
oh, God. Now, how do you feel about going into Wednesday? And we'll get some quick hits here. How do you feel about how they handled this? I'm mixed on it. I don't know. Would you have respected them? Let's ask this. Would you have respected them if they had just gone with everything went as planned? Because I'm thinking about what they would have done in the 80s. And like Crockett, if something had... Because it would have gone wrong in Crockett if they had done it. But they would have played it straight. And they would have said, oh, that explosion really hurt the guys. They'll be out for a while. I don't know. Yeah.
I think you have to do that. I think you sort of do it the steamroll ahead. Or do some variation of that. I think where it fell apart for me was splitting the difference in the Omega Callus promo.
You could have done the explosion after, or just any explosion after the match. Spliced it, used it as the intro into the first one. Said, oh, fans, what you didn't get to see after the show was that the ring actually blew up. That would have been a hell of a save, I think, too. I liked the Kingston promo. I don't think it fixed everything that everybody said it did. It was, oh, man, Eddie Kingston saved this.
No. He didn't. Okay, here's what he did. He solidified the face turn. We got real chemistry between him and Moxley. Chemistry that is intriguing and that, like, I as a viewer want to see developed out further. I want to see what happens. I like this dynamic between Moxley and Kingston. I think they're going to have a lot of fun riffing and playing off of each other. And so, in terms of creating a new angle out of this that is interesting, that part is fine. However... The other part of this is that, like, Kingston with the Sing Sing stuff, that was, like, weird, and that kind of rang a little bit hollow. And it really fell apart for me when we got to Kenny and Don Callis and what's happening on the heel.
69 Don?
Yes. The heel side of the ledger of, like, we were trying to take away your moment from you, which, like... sort of worked meta because they're heels. So when Callis is doing this whole, like, we're taking away your moment from you stuff, when he's saying all of these things, it's like, yeah, but like we know that you were really trying to do that and then it failed, which brings me back to the idea that like it was a botchamania moment to end the pay-per-view, which makes the whole angle kind of goofy. And gets back to the criticism I had when Kenny Omega was belted kind of randomly a few months ago when they took it off of Jon Moxley, which is, okay, fine, belt Kenny Omega, but I don't think that this guy is going to elevate the belt right now because Omega seems really interested in doing sort of goofy angles like this.
I think the idea of a bomb going off and then not going off as a mind game is an interesting play. I wouldn't have done it for laughs if you were going to do it that way. I would have done it as, oh, yeah, we just want to let you know we could blow you up type of thing. And it's like, okay, that's kind of cool. That's kind of evil type of thing. But
man, if they had done that right, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Like, here's the thing with that angle. If you actually write it that way and you have Kingston have this like mind shatter moment and it's all a psych out from Callis and Kenny Omega, that's fine. And I think there might, maybe, I'd have to really think about it more. There might be a way to write what happened on Sunday and make that make sense on Wednesday in that context. Cal is saying, we wanted to take away a moment from you. You were excited about seeing the finish, and going further, you were excited about seeing the finish of this match, which is like meta stuff, the finish of this match where the ring and everything's going to explode, and we took that away from you. Are we not cagey? And like,
Yeah, they went after the fans as opposed to the participants in the match. And
right.
If they had said, oh, that's interesting. Look what we got. We wanted to see who your friends were, John, who was going to come out, maybe somebody to save you or whatever. And now we know where Eddie Kingston stands, and now we're going after you, Kingston. That'd be kind of cool.
And here would be the point where Callis would unveil his new relationship with Butcher, Blade, and Bunny, who he has now turned. However, we decided that the way of getting him off of Kingston was to write them over to Matt Hardy. So, like, when we're looking at this angle and what did they do right and what did they do wrong, I think there's a way of padding out Omega's faction. And also, like, I'd much rather watch Butcher and Blade matches than the Good Brothers at this point. Like, those guys are just doing stuff.
Couple of quick hits on the rest of Dynamite. Maki Ito singing when the music turns off and everything's falling apart around her. I howled. I died. I loved her.
No, I mean, like, I was hysterical when she was doing. She's so committed to this. And she gets the act. It's funny as hell. I think people who aren't familiar with her at all can see this and in 3 to 5 seconds understand what the act is. This has a memeable quality to it. She has dynamic personality. She's got look and all of that. In between the ropes, though, my friend, Maki Ito is still working on it. It's a bit of an exploration. She's exploring the space.
I am fine if she gets some training with QT in the gang and say, hey, look what we did with Tenara Conti. Maybe. Yeah, I'm hoping she improves. I agree there. I like her Hanma headbutt type of thing. You know, that's kind of cool. On the flip side, though, if you watched the live feed on TNT, you got a feed of NBA arena music. I think the most surreal moment of that is Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell's Ain't No Mountain High Enough playing during the Ethan Page match. Like some sort of, low... How do I put this? Some soft mood music version of a New Jack match. When New Jack was doing his magic, they'd have Natural Born Killers playing. No, now I just want Motown playing whenever Ethan Page is doing his match. That's what I want. You know, we can have the Temptations, we can have the Jackson 5, whatever you want, Ethan. You're going to go out there, but Motown's going to play during your entire match.
This is
going to
be my new gimmick, soft rock Chris Novembrino.
Soft rock, yes.
I come out and like we put on grocery store rock and roll. Spin Doctors is playing softly as I am jobbing out to the new heel that we're building up.
You know, we could even put 70s AM rock. We put some Seals and Croft in there. We would put some
Captain
Dan Fogelberg.
Tenille. Yeah.
Captain Tenille would be
good. Don't go breaking my heart as I'm getting tossed over the ropes.
Kiki D and Elton John. Yeah, you know, we could.
No, so I agree. I think that the NBA commentary was a real meta treat for me. I enjoyed the part of the Ethan Page Lee Johnson match where Page is wailing on Lee Johnson and the crowd is going, Defense! it was right after the Mac Maki Ito thing. It like, oh, I was in stitches during all of this. And
I didn't know what was going on. I got to be honest with you. I thought there might be like a game like the G League was playing at the stadium next door.
I had
or something.
To hit the mute button. I had to hit the mute button to make sure.
It was unbearable.
Yeah,
it was unbearable.
Well, I bared it. It was not been. I couldn't do it the whole show. I was definitely tiring of it when they finally pulled it. But like most of the background stuff was syncing up in very funny ways. Like at one point, Ethan Page is doing something heelish, and apparently in the game, the away team had just gotten foul shot, so you've got the NBA crowd booing. And so like that was syncing up nicely. Like some of this stuff was funny, but like, I mean, look, it's low rent, obviously. It doesn't look good.
Circling back to that Omega thing, that's something I need to bring up. Two things that also just made that segment unbearable. I liked the fight that happened, but then Christian Cage's music hits.
Yeah.
Jim Ross doesn't recognize it. Ah, what's that? What the hell's that?
His music sucks, too. He's got crappy music.
That's his TNA theme.
It's boring.
Well, but it's funny because Excalibur, oh, come on, JR, you know what theme that is. And Tony Schiavone trying to run it and save him. And then it's even worse because this goes into their intro thing. There's a fight out there. Christian's just sauntering out. And I get that that's what it's supposed to be, is he's supposed to be a big deal. So he's well, but comes off looking like he's half-assing it and just kind of nonchalantly strolling
outwork,
out there.
Everyone is not out there trying to, like, outwork anyone.
To outwork anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yes, anyone exactly. At all. No, so, like, I you brought this up. I think this is another problem with this segment. So in a lot of these segments, actually all throughout this show, you had big heel turns and big angles get started, and stuff was happening too quickly. So you weren't able to really linger on anything, and part of that's a victim of the retcon. So the retcon buried start points in some of these key going forward angles. I think it also the fact that everyone was here for what the retcon angle was going to be that wove through the show also hid things like, oh, here comes Christian Cage to challenge Kenny Omega. And so I don't think they did a good job getting that off the ground. Man, I didn't realize that was I completely forgot that was Christian's TNA theme. And it's just like, it's not memorable. And some of those TNA themes are actually not bad from that vintage, but like that's not one of them.
And then the final angle, the inner circle, turns out to be on Jericho's side this entire time, including Sammy. But MJF has a swerve of a swerve of a swerve of a swerve, and he has been building a group his whole time.
Have you ever watched M. Night Shyamalan movies? Because I really love them, and I think that this is a great formula.
I like this group, though. I like MJF and Wardlow and FTR and Tully together. Sean Spears thrown in there, I can take if they rebrand him and make him just mean, a big mean guy, as opposed to what Sean Spears has been here. He's the guy that I don't know about in this group. Everybody else I'm fine with.
So I think they're ultimately all going to turn on Wardlow. I like
I can
this.
See that too. I think Wardlow's the Luger of the group.
Yeah,
Wardlow
no.
is the Luger of this horseman. Yeah.
Yeah, I like this faction as a, because I was looking at this faction, I'm going, oh, this is awesome. This gives Wardlow a good, solid faction to feud with here after this. However, this angle is, you can take Chris Jericho out of WWE, but you cannot take the WWE out of Chris Jericho. And
correct.
This is very WWE, and the too clever sort of thing of like, there was a camera. I was videotaping you all along. Oh, you were videotaping me? Well, I knew that you had a secret camera in there. And so I had a secret faction that I was secretly planning as you were planning your secret plan to reveal me. But I'm the one with the secret plan. Like, no, I thought it was too cute by half again. I don't have a problem at all with the MJF faction. I think that turning the inner circle face is a mistake. I think you just need to break.
Oh,
what?
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't.
Because you have the Dark Swagger. Order. No. You have the Dark Order who
that's
are
true.
Face. And they are a massive faction. And I know that we're all, and I don't like the fact they're already doing dissension with Five Angels. I think that, like, if Paige is going to do this, he needs to be straight ahead. He actually needs, like, to be friend and leader. And that needs to be the feel-good faction. I don't need the inner circle. Like, I get that we have memed out Jericho's theme song, and it's, for the employees, mandatory to sing along.
Employee sing-along!
You don't
want to like
get
cheap.
Caught on... it's like working at Olive Garden or working at TGI Fridays, and it's the birthday
Chi-chi's.
Time.
Chi-chi's with the birthday
thing. You don't want to be caught not singing the birthday thing. That's going to get you fired by the manager real quick. But so I get that we did that with them, but I think that turning Jericho face... Okay, that's fine. I think the inner circle have been turned in too many different directions. Santana Ortiz have been yinning and yanging in different directions from week to week. Sammy has been kind of going back and forth. And AEW needs to decide on, are people strong baby faces? Are people strong heels? And when you decide that like someone like an Adam Page is a baby face... And he should be a baby face, by the way. He's a great baby face. He's a real natural one. You gotta make sure that everything he's doing is in service of baby faceness. And like this week with the lawnmower, on one hand, you have quote unquote long term storytelling with the lawnmower joke being paid off finally, him finally buying himself a lawnmower. But on the other hand, it made him come off as aloof. And the fact that he gave all of Matt Hardy's money to the public education like fund in Kentucky or wherever he was giving, or in Virginia, that got buried, and that really needed to be spotlighted because he's a babyface. And when he beats Matt Hardy, had he won that match, would be spending the money lavishly to have a nice, wonderful party and eating filet mignon with Private Party, who would be getting an okay New York strip steak while Matt Hardy is having his third glass of wine and his second filet mignon. Meanwhile, Adam Page should be spotlighted this week as the nicest dude in the world. Elvis, brand new Cadillac style. That needs to be what Adam Page this week with all of Matt Hardy's money was doing. And instead we started off like this thing where Adam Page is kind of an aloof jerk and he gives money to the public education fund but doesn't take care of the people around him. And those people are jerks oftentimes.
The problem with the inner circle where they were never full on heels, and going to your problem, the problem with heels in this company is they're trying to be the cool heels. They're trying to be the NWO heels. You know, they give the little smart alky remark. I mean, you have Miro playing video games and they're doing that kind of wacky stuff.
It's okay to own my t-shirt. It's cool. And what people think about that, it's okay to own my t-shirt, is like you're only wearing one shirt at a show, which I get. Okay, there are some people who like to wear lots of shirts. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about like a normal human wears one t-shirt to a venue. And it's either going to be the baby faces or it's going to be the heels. So every heel t-shirt is a baby face t-shirt that is not being worn. And you want to have baby faces be the cool people.
Yeah, and BTE, or Being the Elite, basically turned the Dark Order baby face because they could do comedy all the time. You know, it's... I want MJF to get
and
rid
so
of some
of his...
And so
the death of Mr. Brody Lee in Embracing Negative One.
Yeah. But I mean, they were starting to get over as Silver was starting to get over as a babyface on that show because he always corpsed.
But I think the original intention with Silver, just real quickly, was they were going to have the entire Dark Order turn on Silver and kick him out, and Silver was going to feud with them.
Yeah. You have flunkies who are actually bad, like the Butcher and the Blade. The Butcher and Blade are never going to be babyfaces unless something miraculous happens. You know,
you say Jack that, Evans, but they might try to do a random 2 week run with that.
The
yeah.
Butcher, the Butcher might. You know, they could. I can see them do it. I
Bunny's
think
in trouble, and Butcher and Blade need to save her.
Yes, yes, because somebody, some diabolical heel does something diabolical for once on this show. You know, Jack Evans and Angelico are. They are untapped potential of just smart alky heel. I want MJF to not be a smart alky heel now. I want him to be a bratty heel, and there's a difference between that. And that's where he belongs, and if Tully can get him there, I'm good. I want this to work because I think the two of them on promos will be fantastic if MJF can get rid of some of his worst qualities in his... You know, he wants that little cultural reference, and he wants that, which are bad in wrestling for the most part.
They get,
you know, he
stale,
wants that little joke.
And they don't usually play well. You're right.
You know, he wants to play it for comedy that he's a jerk. I get it. But the problem with the Inner Circle was after that bubbly bunch sketch, they weren't bad heels. They were cool heels trying to pop people. And it's like, I want some bad heels now, and I want this group to be the bad heels. And I'm hoping that they'll get there. Proud and Powerful could be babyface. They were playing to the crowd a lot. You know, Sammy we know can probably be a babyface because he's a flyer. Jericho, as you said, the only guy in here who can't really be a good babyface, in my opinion, is Hager. Because nobody yes. likes Hager.
No, yeah. And he's not a good promo, and he's not really a personality, and he's not really kind of like fleshed out a character, really, other than like, I occasionally go and trade for MMA fights. And then, you know, yeah. Excalibur mentions that he's training for MMA
now
fights.
He has had moments, like on that first Bubbly Bunch thing when they're calling each other, and he has that moment with his kids. And there was a short time in WWE where he was a good actual over babyface. And maybe there's something in there with him. I don't know. But for the most part, people don't like him.
No. And I just don't think the show needs multiple babyface factions. So... I would run with the Dark Order and not the Inner Circle. I don't think both of them need to be faces. I think it's just... I get why they're turning everyone heels, because they're turning everyone face. And I that's the other thing, is it's just this big, big, big flip of the roster. We don't have a complete list of who turned heel and who turned face. But I bet you it is, if I had to put a number on it, 55% of people that we regularly see on Dynamite turned this week.
Chris, I am now going to give you the floor before I go on a long rant going through the entire main roster week that was terrible, to express your love for one Slapjack.
Yeah, so this week, Slapjack was on his way to getting himself a title shot. Now, nothing comes easy for our friend Mr. Jack. Mr. Jack, unlike other people in this company, has to earn his title shot. So he had a non-title match here against Matt Riddle. I'm sorry, Riddle. He's not actually Matt Riddle. He's just actually Riddle.
He's no one's Matt anymore. He's
no,
just Riddle.
No. He's just Riddle. And Slapjack was on his way to winning this match, but you noticed it, you saw it, throughout the match, where was Sami Zayn's documentary crew when you need him? Throughout the match, you've got Ali yelling at Slapjack, distracting Slapjack, calling the shots for Slapjack, and sabotaging Slapjack, which led to Slapjack getting cheap-shotted and then rolled up or something. I don't remember how the match finished, but it was probably bullshit.
Okay, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Now Jeff will go through 5 hours of WWE programming in a nice little rant, and then Chris can add whatever he wants. We're on the road to WrestleMania, people. And everything sucks on the main roster. There is nothing, there is no redeeming program.
Is there a program that you want to see play out at WrestleMania right now?
No.
Not a single one, right?
Not.
Yeah.
And it looks like the only entertaining thing right now is Ding Dong Hello, and it looks like that's going to be relegated to hosting WrestleMania for some reason. Let me go through this. So the end of Sheamus Drew ends with two guys with stairs running into each other, and that's it. Okay, great. The match up until that point, loved it. But the ending made everybody look like a
It's crazy. Sheamus and Drew have actually had a couple of bangers in the last couple. Like, the work's been there, man. Sheamus has been interesting. They have good chemistry. This is a program that if only there was a big show coming up and they had done some sort of long-form storytelling with Sheamus and Drew McIntyre, I think that this match could really deliver at WrestleMania or some show like that if only that was coming up.
Charlotte Flair continues to be Charlotte Flair on Raw. I watched the Stone Cold show after Raw. She is engaging, she's funny, she's self-deprecating, she's everything I want to watch in a professional wrestler and to root for. And then you watch her on Raw, and she's overbearing, and she's the queen, and oh, by the way, she's declared that she's facing Asuka without actually, I don't know, earning anything about it, but she's going to come on and bury everybody like Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke in just a terrible segment. She's not really cutting a promo on them. She's cutting a promo about WrestleMania that involves her going to it, and I'm talented and you're not, and then just walks off, and it stinks. It stinks on ice.
Sasha and Charlotte have been exploring the space on a new style of promo that does not necessarily resonate with everyone in what I like to call the mainstream. However,
Sasha in a moment. Sasha.
Charlotte's promos suck. Yeah, they're really
y'all
bad.
Y'all know I love Sasha, but yes, Charlotte's promo sucks. Charlotte's character sucks. Charlotte's character is not Charlotte, and that's the problem here, and she's never cut a great promo since coming up on the main roster because they have to do this expository things, and her old man is one of the greatest promos in the world, and you think maybe if they just took the blinders and the leashes and all these other things off, maybe she could cut a promo to help herself and to build a character of some sort, but no, we gotta do it the Vince way. Up yours.
I'll tell you what, Rick should be there. Rick should be there not on screen. Rick should be there off screen as the only other voice that Charlotte's getting for kind of preparing herself for these promos. She bounces her ideas off of Rick. Rick kind of guides her through what needs to be in this promo. And then she goes and she gets better. Rick coaches her off screen at being a better like promo coach. But instead, when they try to build out her heel character, it's all centered around the Flair name. And that necessitates bringing in Rick. And they shouldn't be bringing in Rick for health reasons. Sometimes because of his own health problems. Now because of this giant health situation that we're all living through. Known as COVID-19. And then, like, Rick, when they do stuff on screen with him, yeah, it's obviously shaky, but it never allows Charlotte as a babyface character to go anywhere. It's terrible.
Riddle has a scooter. And the New Day are obnoxious about it. What the hell was this? Well, he smokes weed. He should have a scooter, like... What? I don't understand.
I'm worried about my scooter, and they're gonna take my scooter.
Who is gonna take your scooter?
T-Bar and Reckoning and Mace are going to come and take your scooter during the match against Mr. Jack. I don't think
they're gonna name the scooter, aren't they? They're gonna name this scooter. It's gonna be like Scooty the scooter, and there's gonna be a match where they come down and take it, and that's gonna be the stipulation. If somebody wins, he gets the scooter.
I hope there's a scooter on a pole match, and the winner, the person who climbs the pole, gets the scooter, and they get to use the scooter however they want for 5 minutes.
Peyton Royce got a promo on Raw Talk. Great.
And it was a good promo. It had a little bit of tune to it.
It was a good promo. Yeah, a little bit of tune. If you knew what I knew, probably a little close to reality. We'll see. I think she's going to be the fast lane sacrificial lamb, and that's fine. Maybe this saves her from being the Marty of the Iconics, because Billy Kay's disappeared. So we'll see. But then, now we get to the real main event here. So, the big hero, to free the Universal the WWE Championship, right? Is it WWE Universal on Raw? I can't remember. Whatever. The belt.
The red belt, one. The red belt. The big belt.
The red belt.
Yeah, we'll not the blue belt. Not the blue belt.
Shane McMahon, who magically makes a match into a lumberjack match. Deus Ex Machina. Oh, you had the power to go home all along. All you had to do was click your heels three times.
The worst part was this NBA stuff. The Master of Business Administration, which also found its way into Don Callis' promo, too. I don't care about your MBA. I get that you enjoyed getting into the managerial class. You have fond memory. You were younger. You had all these hopes of ascending into upper middle management. You're in lower middle management. It's not as great as you thought it was going to be, but like you got that MBA. I get it.
I took one MBA class and I decided, one, it's not a brand name school, so it won't be worth anything. And two, if I want to run a business, I should open a business. Anyways, now he's coming out. Just huffing and puffing into a mic. And we're going to build a feud on calling Braun Strowman stupid. Now. Far be it from me to think that this should be the basis of a feud, especially after being a good guy a week before, but this screams Vince McMahon wanting to put something on TV that he's thinking, and I bet you it's because old Braun has a southern accent, so he must be stupid, so old Shane's gonna come out here and call him stupid, and then it turns out Braun's actually stupid. Because he falls for the truck and leaves, and Shane calls him stupid.
So, you're not really doing justice to how agonizing the pacing was.
No, this was terrible.
In this scene.
This was by far
so bad.
This was the worst wrestling segment I've seen since the last one, but maybe in 2 or 3 years. Although Shane is probably responsible for the last one that I thought it might have. Oh, it was the potato. It was about Miz's father. That was also an unbearable one that old Shane did, calling him a potato head or whatever.
Potato face.
Yes. Yeah. Potato face. This was all time. We will look back on this on the Peacock Network where we won't be able to get archives someday and say this was an all time. Crappy segment, Chris.
Yeah, it was so draggy, and you knew that he was gonna do that. And like he like walk, he goes, "I'm sorry," and then he walks away, and like he stops. He's like,
"Let me tell you something, that segment when the first one when he comes out and Braun's demand apology, and he goes." I'm sorry, and he leaves and the music hits. If that had cut to commercial, it would have been the best segment WWE history because it paid off an angle.
It would have paid off an angle. No one says I'm sorry in the WWE. This is Vince's world. No one means it.
Apology is weak, yes.
Yeah, apology is weak.
Go ahead.
But I actually like the premise or the beat of having something that you've offended somebody with, like legitimately offended, you come out and you do the man-to-man, face-to-face, stare you in the eye apology thing, but there's something obviously disingenuous on it, but then you just walk away from it. Like, that little moment that Shane did, right up until he stopped and it was very obvious he was going to turn around and say something, everything, like, just that like quick beat, that was cool. I liked that. I thought that was just an interesting twist. Not for this story.
Okay.
Not for this story. But like for something else. Like, you know, if Adam Cole hadn't been low blowing everyone. If Adam Cole walks out and like real quickly stares Kyle O'Reilly in the eye and says, "I'm sorry," and then walks off, and it's nowhere near sufficient of an apology, but it's also like not pushing it all the way in either direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you're right. I would have found that interesting. It would have been a nice deep story. Hey, maybe he really is sorry.
Yeah, maybe something's going on in his head. Yeah, exactly. Like, I like that, but like, no, dude, like, this is like an absolute garbage segment. Everything about this angle sucks. And to your point, Shane McMahon proved that Strowman is stupid. So, like, the way this needs to end, if it's going to have any payoff, is that Strowman needs to make Shane look even dumber than him.
No, you know what needs to happen? Instead of a match, Braun Strowman needs to get an MBA now. and he needs to run his own business.
I've been going to school, and I sure ain't got my MBA. I want to tell you a thing or two about bookkeeping. Watch my PowerPoint presentation, Shane.
Let me tell you about the Pyramid of Wants. And let me tell you a little bit about supply chain logistics. Here we go.
We had some issues last year, and you know what I said when we had those issues? That sucks.
I've been told that philanthropy is the new marketing. This match sponsored by the University of Phoenix. yes. Okay, and then SmackDown, what should be a main event on one of these nights of WrestleMania. A big match if they could just figure out how to hype up Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. And they do this stupid Bechdel test failing angle.
The question has been, how do we make as much of the division fail the Bechdel test all centered around one discrete figure?
This entire women's division is now focused around
Reginald.
And
wrestling sub-character.
Chris, I called this 2 weeks ago. They wanted the visual of Nia smitten with Reggie because of the big woman, small man aspect of it. Because Vince finds that crap funny. He did with China and Eddie, remember? I mean, this is a thing with him.
I figured out where this goes. She dumps Reggie for James Ellsworth. And James gets his second run. And then because he's really the pioneer of making the division fail the Bechdel test.
There's a lot of the Mandy, Sonya, Dolph, Otis story in here. Or he's going to fall in love with Shayna. Because that'll be where the comedy is, because Shayna doesn't care. And, oh, I like the hard-to-get types. But you have this tag match where Bianca gets rolled up then by Tamina. And she comes out and goes, I never lose. You got to stop playing with that man over the... It's just...
Who's the face between these two? Because, yeah, no, to your point.
Nobody.
No, because Sasha, to Bianca's point, Sasha is still dealing with these distractions from Reginald. And even though she, like, shrugged off Reginald, Reginald's, like, there and, like, meddling in her affairs, and it is getting in Bianca's way. But then Bianca comes off as petulant and whiny, and saying stuff like, I never lose, comes off as, like, pushy and jerkish and heelish. And so, like, who am I supposed to like out of these two? The answer is Reginald.
Sasha. And Sasha is so unlikable in this, too. I mean, if she's that confident, she should just know she's confident. And instead, she's doing this. She's playing the boss character, so to speak. So she has to be sassy. And her sassy is coming off as petulant. And it's just, it's bad. It's bad, it's bad, it's bad. Then.
And one last thing. It hurts this angle to get rolled up by Tamina, because Tamina and Natalya are not serious entities within the WWE roster. I know that they're trying to build up this new tag team. I know that they gave them matching outfits. But, like, even kind of the most avid viewer of WWE, like, doesn't know what Tamina Soka's finishing move is.
Chris, we had to keep the women's tag team titles on Nia and Shayna for this storyline with Reginald and Tamina and Natty and Sasha.
Get to NXT. Bianca and Sasha still have a match coming up against Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, which we're all totally intrigued for following the loss to Tamina Snuka and Natalya in tag team action tonight on SmackDown.
We have an 8-person tag team where Otis and Dolph are on the same team. What? Screw your continuity.
No one remembers that angle. That was 3 months ago.
That was yesterday. We're living for today.
I mean, to that point, it's like they're memory-holing the Mandy Rose romance entirely when it comes to Otis.
They're memory-holing the Buddy Murphy / Murphy Aaliyah romance on social media. Made no mention of it, really. He loses to Cesaro. This Seth Rollins 70s fashion icon crap.
I figured it out. You were asking me what's going on here. I figured it out. He watched Richard Dawson's heyday and was like, this guy understands jackets. He gets it.
The Big E promo?
Wow. The Big E promo.
Did you believe for a moment he was angry? I did not.
No. And he oscillates between, like, the real thing and a little bit of, like, yes, the wild and zany cartoony thing. And yes, the way they were shooting him and zooming in on his face, I didn't think made his face look very good. I actually think, like, he's a little bit better of, like, chest up. Like, you don't have to be that zoomed in on his head, is what I'm saying. They over-zoomed on his head. And then the worst part of this, at the end, was he gets done. Apollo's music hits, and he's looking around for Apollo. But he studiously avoids checking the fourth of the four corners in the ring. Checks one, checks two, checks three, checks three, checks two, checks one, checks one, checks two, checks three, and then here comes Apollo out of four. I forgot that there were four sides in that darn thing.
Check your six. Check your six.
And he forgot to check the entryway, which is effectively where Apollo was coming from, because he's coming from the stairs side of this.
And then the main event. What are we doing with Edge here? What? Who cares who you're fighting at Mania if it's the champ? The whole thing with him being angry at Daniel Bryan for getting a title, who cares? You're getting the title shot at Mania against the guy, the belt you want, not necessarily the guy you want necessarily, and it's just, he's coming off as a jerk. It feels like he's going to screw Daniel Bryan, which is going to make this even worse. Daniel Bryan's the only pure babyface in this entire company, it seems, at this time. I just don't understand it, Chris.
I think we're building to a three-way at WrestleMania between
Mania?
Yes. And that's the smoke and
mirrors. They're going to take away Edge's, oh my goodness.
That's the smoke and mirrors. I think that's the smoke and mirrors here. So I think that initially maybe they wanted to do Edge as just a straight up thing. Oh, the other thing about this, I can't believe you're giving away an Edge match on SmackDown against Jey Uso next week to determine who's going to be the special guest enforcer. Like, the Edge thing should really have some weight and heft to it.
Adam Pearce is right there, and he can say, no, that's a but he's intimidated by Roman, apparently.
No.
You're going to let Jey Uso be a special, I mean, in any sort of reality situation, you're going to let the guy's second be the enforcer for the
match. Yeah, no, Pierce should be like, yeah, that's absolutely not happening. I'm the manager here. But
yes, but yeah, how about you have some stones? How about you take some bureaucratic control?
With Edge and Bryan, there's a really interesting narrative of these guys both had their career taken away, both weren't sure if they were going to come back. There's a lot of parallels between them, which makes for a really natural feud, and a feud that I think they're interested in having down the road here. So, like, I'm in favor of this juxtaposition between Bryan and Edge.
Yes.
But I think you got to really kind of lean into that heavily, and I thought last week Daniel Bryan was the heel. This week, Edge is now the person I think is trending towards the heel territory. And I think it, like, really should have been about Daniel Bryan. Like, we should have had a lot of goodwill starting to build up towards Daniel Bryan. But instead, they're going to kind of surprise turn Daniel Bryan into the babyface. And I think Edge is going back to the ultimate opportunist thing. I will say this, though. I think that Edge as a heel is more intriguing than Edge as a babyface. And I'm more interested in seeing Edge do heel work on WWE TV than babyface work on WWE TV. I like the idea of him pushing people's buttons, getting under people's skin, feeling a little bit entitled, that, like, he climbed back. He did all, I mean, like, him staring down Daniel Bryan and going, like, I did all this recovery, and I came back from these injuries, Daniel, and I know your neck hurt, but my neck was broken. Like, playing down everyone else's injuries and acting like he's the ultimate recovery, like he's the ultimate inspiration. There's some real intrigue in Edge as that type of heel character versus Edge as the aging babyface here for one more match. It's not really that fresh for me.
I'm interested in Edge Daniel Bryan program too. Let Daniel Bryan lose to Roman, get Edge out of there, and then do the program. I agree with you in theory about a heel Edge. The problem is, I would agree with you if Edge were 30, and that was the story. Nobody wants to boo a 47-year-old legend, Hall of Famer like Edge coming back. I don't see that. I don't.
Well, here's the nice part. TV screens don't boo. Zoom screens, they do whatever you want, and if you don't like that, there's always an NBA game on, and I hear that you could pipe in the audio.
There's a WAV file of the audio on the soundboard for WWE anyways. You could just hit cheer or boo, and
no,
that will
there's a new one that I've noticed that I call transitional cheer, where it's like where it's like a mixed reaction, but like it's like we're starting to cheer him now, but he's still kind of a heel. Like, they have one of those too. They use that for Daniel Bryan.
Okay. NXT UK, real quick. Too many. We went over the Hunt thing. I think they do great, great videos on this show.
Yeah.
And I wish the main roster in NXT would do more of these. They introduce characters. They have stories that go along. I liked the Gallus promo. I liked the ones for the women. Didn't even mind the Nina Samuels. There's a dishwasher. Womp, womp. Okay, that's that standard pro wrestling, you're my butler for 30 days type stuff. Yeah, I mean, I thought all these, and the Trent Seven Tyler Bate one, I thought was cute. I thought
I liked,
nice.
Man, you know, I really liked the Trent Seven Tyler Bate thing. I love that Trent Seven's enhancement matches going into this match are not like, he's not having squash matches against people. We know how Trent Seven wrestles. His battle is against himself. And we talked about this man versus himself thing. I really like this angle with Trent Seven. You can't do it all the time. It's like just a fresh way to go. And I love having Tyler Bates' Zen character being there to kind of help Trent Seven. I think it fleshes that out. I wouldn't say turn Trent Seven, but if you turned Trent Seven on Tyler Bate, that would be fun. But what I liked here is I liked the Teoman debut. I thought the Teoman debut was fun.
I liked that.
Didn't overstay its welcome. He had a lot of personalities. He was doing everything. He was really savage and vicious and
yeah.
And like,
yeah, I like that.
And I liked the
Jobbers getting killed. I do.
And I liked Jones trying to fire back a little bit. There was some heart there. It got
there's
crushed.
Some reality to it.
Yeah, but like I liked Teoman going, okay, I got to get this show on the road. Like that actually hurt. I didn't like that forearm shot. That actually hurt me.
I got news for you. Amir Jordan and Kenny Williams. Kenny is going to eventually get Amir Jordan on his side, and they are going to be a heel tag team. They are not going to break up. This breakup is not going to happen, Chris.
That's great. That's long form storytelling, buddy. Like, this is
no. I don't. What the hell is? I hate this team so much. I hate them. And I don't want them on my screen.
As was pointed out by Edge, who has had a career that has spanned four decades. This is an angle that has spanned...
Four decades, apparently.
Four,
which is weird. Cause...
4 decades. Actually, I did the math. I have spanned 5 decades. 1980s.
Oh, actually, that's true. That's
Yeah. So what Edge is doing is something similar to what I did at age 34, which is saying, like, 86 and... And 2021 now counts as decade 5 here. This is an angle that has spanned 2 decades, multiple years, one of the longest running angles in professional wrestling. Amir Jordan, Kenny Williams, they twist, they turn, but they stay together. And like, you got to applaud it. And Amir Jordan.
Friendship.
Amir Jordan, God, what a performance this week. The best part is the referee clearly standing in between them going like, Kenny, I can't believe you just cheated. You can't just cheat. You cheated. And the referee's standing there like an idiot who doesn't have any ears. As Amir Jordan is clearly spotlighting that his tag partner has just cheated and broken the rules in this match, which for all intents and purposes, if the referee saw them, there would be a penalty of disqualification, and that's why heels cheat.
The match of 1,000 promos, Ginny and Joseph Connor lose to Piper Niven and Jack Starrs. When Piper Niven ends up slamming Joseph Connor, then slams Jack Starrs on him. The intergender... Joseph Connor needs to go now, doesn't he?
He's useless now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got beat by a woman. And I hate to say that in a sexist way, but, you know.
How do you ever, in this division, in NXT UK, how do you seriously push Joseph Connors against any of the Gallus boys, like a Joe Coffey, let alone pushing a Joseph Connors against Walter? You can't belt him. He's not a cruiserweight. There is no mid champion in NXT UK. The most you can do with Joseph Connors at this point is put him in a tag team, and his value above replacement doesn't exist. He's just a guy.
Or you repackage him in some way, and he has a new gimmick. But we've seen these gimmicks, and they're terrible every time. Ginny needs to upgrade.
Actually, to that point, Ginny needs to do stuff now to get her heat back because Joseph Connors has been a heat sink. It never made any sense for her to get Joseph Connors in the first place. The Joseph Connor plan didn't work out. And so for a heel, that actually does take away a little bit of your thunder. So now Ginny has to get her thunder back somehow.
Come to NXT, please. Speaking of which, we will transition. So... You have Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez lose to the women's tag team championships because they need those titles for this main roster story. This is what I think. This is why I think they couldn't give them up, because I think they originally wanted them to win and then lose them to Shotzi and Ember. Instead, you debut these new NXT women's tag team titles, even though you don't have that many women's tag teams in the division other than Candice and Indy Hartwell, or Casey and Lacey for the most part, or Aaliyah and Jesse Kamiya, a real murderer's row of tag teams.
They assembled all of them out there to begin this show. It was a real who's that of the women's division.
Oh, that was... We need everybody to come in on a Saturday morning for a team meeting before we open. And you can just see all the body language there. But even better, you make them the first NXT women's tag team titles, title holders. And they're ecstatic about this. And then we have to have them have their first defense on the show.
Oh, and they have to turn heel too. Like, you give them the titles, and they have to. I mean, they were sort
of. They have to go back to being heels.
Yes, but like they were sort of. They were wronged last week. The Shayna Baszler Dakota Kai story very much leaned on the fact that Shayna Baszler was victimizing Dakota Kai, and they didn't really pay any of that off. So they went from being happy about this, from feeling honored that they got the titles, to us feeling like an injustice had been righted. And then immediately they turn back to being heels again. And like, this is my same complaint with a lot of what was going on in AEW, and it's my complaint across apparently all of wrestling right now, which is when you turn people left and right, I stop caring at a certain point. It's like Lex Luger syndrome.
And then they lose the women's tag titles that they had just been gifted because they could. That promo was terrible too. Raquel Gonzalez, this is our first step in taking over the world. Yeah, well, you couldn't take over the women's tag team titles.
Sometimes you break
roster.
Your ankle on your first step, Jeff. That happens. That's what they say. It's one small step for man. I just broke my ankle.
Instead of doing what they're doing on the main roster, kind of, and maybe giving the tag titles to your next women's title contender in Raquel Gonzalez, we have to take them off because we're making Raquel Gonzalez the next title contender for EO. And the big loser here is the person who deserves a title reign of some kind in this thing the most, Dakota Kai, who in this match was just taking abuse and great at it. And I love Dakota Kai, and I feel like she's been the victim of bad timing on her signing, because had she come in a little earlier, she might have been a horsewoman. Now she is... What do you do with Dakota now? Is she going to second Raquel in this title match and hopefully cause her to win, I guess? But you could have done that with the tag belts.
And then this match was a real mess for her, because she takes a ton of heat. The former champions now don't really get much of anything throughout the course of this match, with the exception of the egregious breaking of the Eclipse, a move that 100% should absolutely be protected. And I was muttering when Raquel Gonzalez broke this, I was like, so help me God, if they don't win this match at this point, I will break my TV. Like, because it was after this whole week of like pointless turns and what... The Eclipse is such an obvious move that needs to be protected, because it's all about the momentum. It's not, you can't outpower it, because the way she's getting you is by using her downward physical motion. Like, that shouldn't be broken by Raquel Gonzalez. But, like, the challengers got most of this match. That one big reversal by the heels is notable in the sense that the heels, the champions who are the heels, probably went... on the loser's side of 65-35 in this match. It was bizarre.
Looks like Jordan Devlin is coming back to feud with
Santos Escobar.
Santos Escobar.
Should make some for some matches. Yeah, I'm into these matches. They don't even really need to turn either one of them face, and don't worry, they probably won't for any consistent length of time given the odds. But like, I like the idea of them feuding. I think it's fun.
I think it's... See, I don't mind heel-heel feuds sometimes.
No.
And I don't mind the grizzled young veterans coming out and facing Legado del Fantasma. Because
okay,
they seem
Zach
like the kind
Gibson
of guys who would do that.
Is a generational talent when it comes to...
On
here's
the
microphone. You have the distance from the entryway down to the ring to get this match over, to explain who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. And there's like no wasted motion in everything that Zach Gibson does. Like, it's a tone thing, it's a posture thing. James Drake gets how to play off of this. He amplifies it. He also does a little more talking now too. They're getting a little more comfortable with him on the stick as well. But Gibson, like, oh my God, if I was starting a wrestling promotion and you gave me like five people, Gibson's definitely one of my five.
I think it'd probably be Gibson, MJF, if I'm doing just men. Gibson and MJF would probably be in my top five. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want guys who can talk. And
that's what wrestling
talks,
is.
It makes,
it's about the stories.
Yes.
I need to like someone. I need to hate someone. I want to see a story play out where the guy I hate has bad stuff happen to him. Or even worse, like I like seeing when the good guy I like has bad stuff happen to him, because I want them to get back and I want them to right the wrong that's happening to them.
I'm a guy who thinks story happens when you have better characters.
Yeah.
And the problem is they plot everything, and so all the promos become about plot, and I don't want to hear that anymore.
No, I think to your point,
but it
characters,
feels like,
you should be able to just pitch a scene to two characters. The characters are really interesting. Like, The Undertaker and Mankind are so different in terms of characters that you could pitch a scene between The Undertaker and Mankind, just like, and Mankind obviously would approach this problem in a very different way from the way The Undertaker does, and those characters and the strength of those characters makes the tension and the friction points really obvious.
I'm a jerk with a big mouth, so of course I might run afoul of other heels because I have a big mouth. I am fine with that as logical storytelling. I really am. But it feels like we're getting a four-way for the number one contender, because I'm assuming MSK and Breezango are going to be thrown in here, and we're going to have some schmoz because it's going to be a spot fest for NXT TakeOver, which I guess is fine. I'll take it.
Yeah, that's fine. I think we're also probably going to get like a four-on-four match here along the way to TakeOver.
I think we'll get that in. I think we'll get that on the go-home, probably. Or we'll get that leading up in some way. I could see that. Yeah, and then Pete Dunne is killing people. Jake Atlas.
Poor Jake Atlas. Poor Jake Atlas.
What the hell?
When I saw him in the room, I was like, no, he's going to do the squash art. Oh, man. Like, I
Jake would have been a big star at AEW, but nope, I want to pursue my dreams, and now he's pursuing his dreams. I don't know. I like him, but, man, if you're going to beat him, he's not going to be anything. If you want to make him something, keep him off TV. I did like the
if we want to fix Jake Atlas, he's got to go off TV. We got to start doing like the Lucha Underground advertisement style promos.
Yep.
Refresh, complete reset. Get us back into Jake Atlas. Have him like honestly, yeah, have him doing stuff. And then he does need to freshen up his gimmick. He needs something new entirely.
Yeah, I liked the Leon Ruff promo after this. I kind of like his and Swerve's little program here. I like that Leon Ruff was angry, but there's too much of the "I've been working so hard" type of crap. Everybody works hard. Shut up.
Yeah, no. So, like, the good on this, I thought, was, and we were talking about Big E and how I thought
the
framing.
Intensity.
The framing on Big E, though, the camera angle and, like, the actual. Yeah. I thought what they got on Ruff made him look more formidable. So he's underdog, but like when you're up close, you felt a little bit more of his intensity. It humanized him a little bit more, made him a little less of a cartoon character. And as an underdog babyface, I like Vince so often goes like, "Look at how small that guy is." And I think what we need more is like a sense of intimacy with our underdog baby face. And like the angle that they were shooting Ruff, which I think was like a chest up sort of angle, gave him. It made him feel like a normal person and gave him like an adult level of seriousness. Some of the dialogue and stuff was, "I'm happy to be here. What an honor and privilege it is to be a champion.
It's my dream. It's always been my dream." And that was who? That was the Zoe Starks promo.
Yeah.
Which didn't tell us anything about Zoe.
No.
Really, other than I was abused, but I watched WWE and it made me feel good, and now I'm a wrestler.
The worst part about the Zoe Starks thing is like it felt like there's real stuff that they told her, just gloss over it. And like it wasn't even I was abused. It was like dark times or something like that made it very clear that like something really bad happened that we had to gloss.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily need to go into like the graphic R level details of what happened, but like, dude, something more real.
But Hulk Hogan got me out of that. Okay,
yeah,
great.
I know. Yeah. I wanted to be Hulk Hogan, which every I mean, also know your audience. The Zoomer.
Is she not a person of color?
Zoe Stark? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
I thought she might be. Well, never mind.
If
that's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
What I'm saying is Hulk Hogan from 1987, it was not even relevant to 34-year-old Chris, who's listening to the show, right? Or listening to the show. Listening and appearing on my own podcast. I'm gawking at myself, as it were. Whereas for someone who was born in 2001, Hulk Hogan is entirely in the past tense. He's kind of like Bruno Sammartino was to me.
Yeah.
Like he's a really, people are aware of Hulk Hogan, but like I bet you a lot of the kids, and by the kids I mean like the 20-year-olds and stuff who are going to AEW shows, may not have ever watched a full Hulk Hogan match from beginning, middle, and end. Have seen clips, know that he did the big boot and the leg drop, can even go like, yeah, the one with the Ultimate Warrior match. But I don't know if they ever actually saw the Ultimate Warrior match from beginning, middle, and end. And like Hogan, you know, rolling up his shoulder, any of that stuff, just no resonance. And so when Zoe Starks is talking about Hulk Hogan, you know, I don't believe her. And I think that's the other part is, you know, I at 34 go like, yeah, he didn't have that resonance to you. Hogan sucked as, like, you know, and I just don't believe that.
So we rushed through what should have been probably a takeover match to me, takeover level match in Io Shirai and Toni Storm. To get to Raquel Gonzalez, I think this was a good match. I don't know what you do with Toni Storm now. She's turned on her tag partner already. Do they kiss and make up? Do you send Toni to the main roster? Could see that happen.
I think she aligns with Dakota and Raquel.
Okay, I could go with that too.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get me super excited.
It just feels like this shouldn't have been a blow-off to me. This should have been something, and then if you wanted to move, if Raquel wanted to come down and interrupt this, I'd have been fine with it. Because
Io walking up to Raquel and getting right in Raquel's face, like you go, oh, she's the crazy girl. She's tough. She didn't take no prisoner. She's an alpha. What does the heel do to re-raise on that? And what Raquel did was like, okay,
she stands there staring for a few moments.
Oh, goodness. No, and okay. What should have happened is Dakota and Raquel stop a mud hole in her and go like, yeah, challenge accepted.
Yes, they should have beat her down.
Yeah.
What are you doing in here? Just beat the crap out of her, and then there you go.
You want a title shot? I want the belt. And beat her with the belt.
Pete Dunne's Killing Fools. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
We already did that. Xia Li getting killed by a crutch, and then
So, but she did defeat Caden Carter by disqualification because annoying Casey Catanzaro, who you like want to see her.
I can't take it anymore.
when little Limpsy makes her way down to the ring, and she's like limping around. No, oh, man. It hurts. Like,
Tiny Tim.
I want Xia Li to go out there, kick out Tiny Tim, kick out the crutch, and be like, this is not a child's place. This is not
the leg. This is an adult zone.
This is Adult Swim, kid. Yeah. You need to wait your 15 minutes. Go and get some ice cream. Send her packing. And instead, totally killing the heat of Xia Li, in comes Casey Catanzaro with her crutch, breaking up the match, and then Xia Li kind of starts getting the heat back, but then they start beating her up with the crutch. Xia Li's begging off, and then Boa shows up. We get some more intergender, because Lord knows we need an intergender angle between Casey and Lacey and Boa and Xia. Like, there's a mixed tag match we want to see. That's something we're excited about. And then that gets broken up. So, like, all of the intrigue and the mystique of these now rebranded and martial arts trained fighters from China, Xia and Boa, have been sort of destroyed because Caden Carter and Lacey Lane, who did not win,
Lollipop Guild,
Not win that tournament, who were second round flameouts in that tournament where they were like, we're going to win it, we're going to the finals, and then they lose. Like, they've dismantled your new super mystical kung fu martial arts movie angle. Like, no, this sucks. Casey Catanzaro has go away heat with me. I thought there was potential with at one point, but like, I want nothing. I want her to be a heel and her to be annoying, or I want her to go away.
You're scaring me. That's
why am I turning into you? Are you worried that I'm aging?
Wow. You went there, huh?
I went there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Can see you on camera. I can see you on camera being smug on this one.
Comfortably
we'll end
so.
With a, Adam Cole gets soundly and cleanly defeated by Finn Balor. Kyle O'Reilly comes in, takes off the Undisputed Era armband. I loved the moment in commentary where Wade goes, so is that Adam Cole's music or the Undisputed Era's music? Because we don't know.
Well, Roman Reigns did this with the Shield's music where he just sort of like appropriately, he's like, this is mine now. Seth Rollins, you will go from weird theme song to weird theme song after that one that sort of worked for you.
I would love if the payoff of this whole thing for the Undisputed Era part, because it looks like they're going to break him off and go up against Kyle, although I think Roddy may get entered into this as a three-way in some ways. Bobby Fish has to come back and ask McKenzie, hey, have the rest of the Undisputed Era got here yet? Can't find him anywhere.
I would love for Bobby Fish to, like, he's just not been paying attention to wrestling at all for the last few months.
Yeah, I've been on vacation.
Hey, Mackenzie. So, yeah, I've been away. What's been going on?
Haven't you been watching NXT? Yeah. No, I got better things to watch. Are you kidding me? It's just main roster with yellow ropes.
No, of course not. But, like, so, like, tell me what's been going on. What's Square been up to? Whoa, that's great. Yeah. Oh, that's really wild. Leon Ruff won the North. Who is that guy? He won the North American title?
He has been back. Remember, he was back for War Games, and he was back a couple of times. Like one time in between.
All right.
He hasn't been gone that long, exactly. But, yeah. No, hey, how's Velveteen Dream doing?
Yeah. What's Bronson Reed been up to? I think big things are on the horizon for that guy.
And then I guess we're going to get now for TakeOver, Finn versus Fallen Prey. Stand and Deliver, Fallen Prey, Karrion Kross. Because he just...
What took you so long? Like a weird, cheesy horror movie.
You know what that was?
What?
That was Goldberg killing all the Fiend's heat by going, I know you're behind me, and then turning around like it's no big deal.
Mm. Mm. Big E needed to take a lesson out of that playbook. If he had been able to do that with a...
needs a rear view mirror.
Check all four sides of the ring and then hit him with a I know you're behind me move. I liked the spot in this where O'Reilly removes the armband from Adam Cole. I actually the low blowing is getting a little gratuitous, and like it's a lazy writing technique is my critique of it. It's just lazy and it reeks of laziness. But I actually like the whole no, you betrayed what this is about. I'm taking the armband off. You can't kick me out. I'm kicking you out, buddy. It doesn't really matter who's kicking who out. But like the fact that Adam Cole was purporting to be the true inheritor of the Undisputed in the Undisputed Legacy. I like that O'Reilly's like, no, I still want that. That still matters to me. I think he's putting it on himself. But like, you don't get to take that from us.
Yeah, and I hope Roddy joins Kyle in this. I hope the three of them maybe find a fourth, or they just go off on their own. You know, maybe bring in a second woman again. You know, take Conti at that 1 week.
Roddy and O'Reilly going up against the Rising Imperium or the Grizzled Young Veterans. Like, there's a lot of fun feuds for them along the way here where they could trade some losses.
I liked, by the way, that's something I skipped over. I probably shouldn't have, but I liked the part of the Imperium angle where he goes, hey, you know, we want you back. If you want to bring your friend, come along. We're fine with that. Whatever. And just kind of, I thought that was kind of cool. Marcel Bartel as a spokesperson.
That was great. I didn't like the Thatcher Ciampa dynamic. Like their part of it, I thought was liking.
I didn't either.
But I love as just a little plot point.
But the Fabian Aichner part was great. It's like, hey, you know what? Because we all, hey, oh, you have another friend? Yeah, bring him along down the
That's
party.
It's
That's
a
fine.
Way easier way to poison someone, right? Like if you want to, like, seduce someone.
Maybe he's cool. No, maybe he'll come in and get fit.
And we're chill people. You know we're chill because you can bring one of your friends. It's chill. We're chill because you can bring a friend. Like, you know, like.
But we know you're cool. We know you're cool because you've been with us before. If you bring your friend, that's good enough for us as long as he's not, you know, slagging or anything.
It's like higher. Like we, in terms of dramatic irony, can see the game being played there, but it's plausible and it's like a good way of getting into Thatcher's head because the other part is Thatcher's smart. So you need to get into the guy's head in a way that is smart, and this is a smart way to get there. I really liked that beat. I just thought that like Ciampa and Thatcher were like it. The dynamic between them is such an untenable and unsustainable dynamic that they had to deliver this dialogue. It was like, well, surely, Thatcher, you can't be thinking of doing that, right? I mean, we don't need them, right? I mean, surely not, right? I mean, we don't need that.
The problem is, it's disappointing if Walter doesn't come in and put the kibosh.
Of course.
Really, on Thatcher. It really, yeah. And so,
no, they need to betray them quickly.
I don't think Walter's coming though. I don't think Walter's coming to the States. That's the thing.
Oh.
So we'll see.
Okay.
Well, that's part of the deal. He really never wanted to come to the States all that much, except for special occasions. I could see him doing it maybe for TakeOver. Maybe he comes over because that's a special occasion, so to speak. But, we'll see. I liked that part of it. That's let's end on a good note then. Follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. You can follow Chris at DWATG. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Network. We thank you all for listening.
And watching. They can watch now.
Well, the video may not be up. So let's not put the cart before the horse.
No, let's put the cart before the horse. That's how the cart gets there faster. The horse pushes.
Visit the site, read the columns. We have some good ones up there, as well as other shows on the network, such as Music of the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich, who engages us in our arcane references and dad jokes all the time. Everything Elite, and of course, the flagship with Joe and Rich, talking all your Hot Pockets needs. Chris, you have podcasts that you do that are not wrestling because you're an interesting person, unlike me. Tell us about them.
Yes, I talk about the cameras that are... don't worry about the government. I did do an episode on Ring Doorbell. The most recent show, though, has very little to do with cameras. I guess a little bit to do with government surveillance. It's about Myanmar, though. So if you're interested in a deep dive in Myanmar, I did a fair amount of research for this one. And, you know, I'm riffing, working off a slate. We've got like 14 different articles that I kind of pull through. So if you want to get caught up as to what's going on in Myanmar and get a little take of like how I cash out on foreign policy and all that stuff, that's the episode for you. You can find it at don'tworry.tv on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify.
And again, if you want to help me out, a very nice tweet to Peacock TV asking them to interview me for the WWE gig, I'd appreciate it.
Get at me. I've got the bracelets. They spell his name.